Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. This is a previously unscheduled podcast. Some people would call it emergency. I don't know. I'm not in a... I don't feel like emergency, but emergency happens after trades. This is a big moment in the NBA that just happened today. Robert Sarver announcing that he is going to sell the Phoenix Suns. Joining me, we were all together in LA yesterday, but today's a new day. And joining me from Oakland is Mark J. Spears from Manscaped. Hey, Mark.
What's happening, man? This is a big deal.
And joining me from Los Angeles, in a room I was just in like 12 hours ago, is Ramona Shelburne, fresh off the set of NBA Today. How's it going?
Going well. I know that I've done a little rearranging of all the furniture in this room, Brian. So
I know.
See if you recognize it.
That's right. So Spears, you've been very vocal, both on television and on social media. I just want to know, I mean, I saw what you wrote, but I wanted to know what you thought about today when Robert Sarver put out that statement that he was going to sell the team. We'll talk about the statement and what's in it, but I just wanted to know what your reaction was.
Pleasantly surprised and ecstatic. I like to say that I think the players had a lot to do with it. You know, the NBA decided not to push for Sarver to be pushed out like they did with Sterling. The owners were never put to a vote. Draymond Green suggested yesterday that they should. But I just want to say,
I don't want to interrupt you, but that was a big moment. Yeah. When Draymond did that, in my view, that was a big moment.
So I kind of felt with LeBron James's tweet, Chris Paul's tweet, Draymond's words on the podcast, like the players were starting to boil the water hotter and hotter. And I think it was going to reach a boiling point on Sunday and Monday, and still will, from media days, when, you know, we'll hear from stars throughout the league, players who, you know, can be, have activist mentalities throughout the league. But also Suns media day, which Brian, you and I are planning to attend. I mean, I can't wait to hear from Monty Williams, Devin Booker, Chris Paul in length, DeAndre Ayton, Bridges, and then, you know, James Jones, who I'm guessing got his arm twisted a little bit to support Sarver in the beginning based on his position.
His support was tepid. It was. Yes.
It's like, I work here. I'm the high position.
He gave name, rank, and serial. So. Yeah, he gave a... He gave name, rank, and serial number, essentially.
But I do think that, you know, it's one thing to be a tough guy and want to fight it out. But when you're somewhere where you're not welcome, where people don't want you to be. And Brian, I think one thing that we'll see on Monday that nationally that we haven't been able to see is the pain that's in Phoenix right now. Like, I think Baxter has... Holmes, who did an amazing reporting job, has given us some of that. But when I've talked to people from Phoenix, man, whether it's, you know, a lot of it, you know, women, people that work there, Black people, like, there's a lot of pain there that I think we will feel stronger when we get there. So I think with Sarver, like, he probably was already kind of, you know, he can't go anywhere in Phoenix without somebody looking cross-eyed at him right now, right? When before he was treated like a, you know, a celebrity. And then to know that when you come back, the players don't want you back, like, why would you want to be a part of it? So it actually happened faster than I thought.
Me too.
But I'm glad it did. And it probably takes a lot of heat off the NBA and the owners. For what could have been, you know, some very potentially interesting reactions from the players and maybe actions from the players once media day and the season arrives.
Yeah, Ramona, I think we got to where it was supposed to go, which is Robert Sarver saying, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an upsetting way to get there.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are happy, but I'm upset by the way this whole thing played out. It doesn't sit right with me. It you know, there's a there was a rejoicing that the players were able to force action, and I respect that. But this is the third owner in the last 8 years now who has sold his team under a racial cloud. And it's very upsetting because I work in the league every day of the year, and I want to believe that it is a progressive league. And this keeps happening, and it does, I guess it's progress, but it also feels like a setback to me. And now this is three times in 8 years. And so Robert Sarver is not a part of the league. It's a good day for the NBA, but it's also a day the NBA has to look itself in the mirror and realize that there's some stuff in that mirror that ain't, that's not, doesn't look good too.
You know, change doesn't happen in a straight line, right? Like there's not just like, it's not like a graph that goes up, you know, in a nice progression. There's ups and downs to it. There's two steps forward, one step back. There's high moments. And I think that like, we got to the right place though. Like, you know, that's, we've talked about the public pressure that we've seen the players put on. And I have to commend all three of the big voices here. LeBron James got a, like LeBron James, what was interesting this time, it reminded me a lot of the Sterling situation where that happened. The tape comes out. LeBron is the first player of note in front of a microphone the next morning at shoot around. It was the Miami Heat were playing in a playoff series. And he stepped forward in front of the microphone and said, there's no place for Donald Sterling in this league. And when LeBron spoke, it kind of opened the door for everybody else to speak, but also it kind of compelled everybody else to speak too, right? I think it was, in this one, LeBron was not asked. He just tweeted. Right. He took it upon himself to give an opinion. Same with Chris Paul. Like, he was not in front of a microphone where his opinion was asked at media day. He took it upon himself to tweet and to say that, and not just tweet, I'm hurt by the allegation, I'm hurt by the report, I'm hurt by what's in it. But he said, our league definitely got this wrong in terms of the 1 year punishment. Like that is specific. And that is, and then Draymond didn't just express anger. Draymond called to action. He put forth some actionables. I want the owners to vote on this. I think that, you know, people need to step in. And
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just give me, you give me a moment when you're done to talk about Draymond. Yeah. So go ahead.
And he, you know, he did his homework. Like, this wasn't, you know, it was like, there's raw anger and emotion, which you talked about, Mark, but there's also, if you're going to take action, you know, it's one thing to just get mad about it. It's another thing to be very specific in what you're asking for. And I think that really mattered. Plus, and I can tell you this, reporting on this story throughout, but also especially today, there was a lot of private pressure on Robert Sarver as well. We knew about PayPal and they were going to end their relationship with the Suns as long as Sarver was still involved. I know of another very large corporation and sponsor of the league and the Suns that was right behind them. There was several other big companies that were lining up to sort of, the dominoes were about to fall behind the scenes in terms of.
Don't you think he knew that? Don't
here?
You? I mean, like,
oh yeah,
he knew he was going to take an absolute gut shot after gut shot starting on Monday.
Yes. Yeah. And it was going to be
Sunday.
Monday was media day.
Well, right. The media day started Sunday. You're right.
Right. And so this was, that was going to, the dominoes were going to start falling. And so he had and I can say this too. Adam Silver put forth the punishment public and he gave remarks on it and he explained himself. There was also a lot of private pressure though, coming from around the league on Sarver. Helping to get Sarver there. He obviously resisted quite a bit in terms of the first punishment and then especially to sell the team. You can see in his statement, which we can dissect later if you want, he thinks he's, you know, he sort of chalked it up to cancel culture as a, you know, I don't know. That was
we'll
not exactly contrite. Okay.
Yeah.
But it was,
you not exactly contrite. That's more kindness than he deserves, quite frankly.
But there was a lot of pressure and the dominoes were about to start falling very publicly and more embarrassingly, for both Robert Sarver and the league. And I hate to say this in a cold way, but, he was about to become very bad for business.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we got here as quickly as we did.
And I think we also have to give some respect to, I'm probably butchering her last name because I love this woman, so I want to say it right. Tamika Tremaglio.
Tremaglio, but close Tremaglio. Enough, and you're right.
Yeah. From the executive director of the Players Association. And she sent me a statement the other day that was really, really strong, basically saying that there was no place in this league for Sarver. The next day, she doubled down on it, went on NBA Today, talked to Malik Andrews, and said that he should be out of the league. She is the voice of the players.
Yeah.
She came off so strong in that interview with Malika. And Malika, like, said, I just want to put a point on this, Tamika. This is what you are saying. And she, like, unequivocally said, we want him banned. And she did it with a forceful elegance. And this is somebody who we are just learning about. Yeah. Even the players who are all learning about her. She has been in the job only a couple of months.
Yeah.
And is in the middle of collective bargaining agreement talks right now, which is
her
number one job, quite frankly. Maybe she would argue that, but from a business standpoint, it's her number one job. And, you know,
she looks real strong right now. She looked real strong.
Frankly, I would even have given her a pass if she sort of said she let it go a little bit because the CBA talks were more important to the 450 players. But she didn't. She didn't. She came out, and then they put out another statement. The players, WNBA, or was it WNBA Players Association today?
Yeah.
But the Players Association, the WNBA Players Association, put out a statement today before Sarver. Like, the associations, which Tamika's obviously runs, but they were very strong. The union stepped up strongly here. You're right, Spears.
Yeah. So no, kudos to her. We're gonna get to know her a lot more. On a fun note, she makes a mean rum cake, and she's probably one of the best dressers in the world.
Her fashion. How do you describe her fashion? Her fashion is elaborate.
Yes.
I can't tell. But
not in a bad way. Wow.
No, I don't know anybody who dresses like her, and you can't tell where one article of clothing ends and the other one starts. It's just like a portrait.
The way you're just, what you're looking for is, it makes a statement.
Yeah,
you know, makes a statement. It's a take notice, right?
She made a verbal statement the other day.
We need to get her some like theme music when she walks into a room. You know, like some kind of like Shaft kind of thing or something. I don't know. Because when she walks in the room, like, you like the glasses, everything. I like, she ain't just throwing on a hoodie. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like her hoodie got diamonds on it or something like that. I mean, on a serious note, she has made no bones about how she felt. And for the players that, you know, perhaps are a little gun shy about saying anything, she spoke for them. And very strongly.
I want to talk about Draymond for a moment.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
Well, Draymond has talked about new media. And some of it over the months has been a tweaking of the media because, you know, he in some cases, he doesn't think the media knows what they're talking about. And sometimes he's right. And sometimes he's full of it. Okay. We can agree on that. Maybe he doesn't agree, but I'm telling you from my viewpoint, sometimes he's full of it and sometimes he's right. Draymond's usage of his podcast here was high level chess.
Mic drop.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Draymond is a very smart individual. But Draymond's usage of his podcast to get that message across and what he was asking for and the way he presented it was a masterpiece. And what he wanted was he wanted the owners to vote. Because there is a process in which you can remove an owner, and it requires a 2/3 vote, which I think would be 24.
Three quarters.
Right. So it would need 24 yes votes. And he was basically like, are you with us or against us? Show us. Now, Adam Silver in that press conference, which was painful for a number of reasons, stumbled around talking about how that process was very cumbersome and complicated.
Look, it's not C-SPAN, right? Like, it's not going to be televised, but we're going to find out.
Right. We're going to find out. And even if we didn't find out, maybe we would have known. We would have known a lot, I'm sure. And
Brian, either way, I'll say this too. Even if we didn't find out if the end result was supportive of Sarver, then every owner gets branded that way, regardless of how they voted.
It was a power chess move. And I don't know what calls and text messages Robert Sarver was taking. But when I listened to that podcast, I was like, wow, what's going to happen from here? Because LeBron used, like LeBron plays basketball, LeBron came down the lane and ran over him for an and one. Mm-hmm. Draymond, like he plays basketball, came down, looked off one defender, used a play that he had set up three quarters before to hit a guy on a back cut for a perfect play. It was absolutely a incredible use of the platform, an incredible use of strategy, and incredible delivery. And when I heard that, I was like, wow, if I was an owner, I would not want any part of that. Because while I didn't think there would be a vote, like players who heard Draymond say that would come to media day on Monday and say, that's a good idea. Yep. Let's call for a vote. And before Silver's press conference, Tim Bontemps was in New York at the hotel where Silver was going to give his press conference. And I was in Cleveland doing a Donovan Mitchell availability. And before in the morning, Tim and I got on the phone and we wanted to formulate questions. And one of the things that we wanted to do was to get Adam Silver on the record about whether or not Robert Sarver had been asked or urged to voluntarily sell, because that was the right thing for the league to do. That maybe that they couldn't, you know, throw him out without opening themselves up to a very painful lawsuit. Maybe there wasn't the support amongst the owners to do that anyway, because it opens up a can of, you know, if Robert Sarver can be, you know, really brought to accountability for statements he made 10, 12 years ago, what other statements were made 10, 12 years ago that can be used? I mean, it's an uncomfortable position for the owners. And one of the things that Tim asked was, did you talk to Robert Sarver about voluntarily selling? And Adam said, no. He said, you know, pretty much unequivocally, no. I didn't believe Adam. But I'm sure that was something that the NBA wanted. And so whether it was Draymond, whether it was LeBron, whether it was the fear of next week, whether it was the fear of sponsors, whether it was what Adam Silver has said or other owners and maybe people who could influence Robert Sarver had said, it all came together and it got, I think, the best outcome for the league. But Spears, I think Draymond's words were, to my viewpoint, as powerful as what LeBron did.
I mean, he, and then it, there's timing too, right? Like him waiting to when he did it. And I certainly like when LeBron tweets and when Chris tweets that, that resonates throughout the league, but Draymond gave you a sermon.
He
gave you a soliloquy, and I really wish I knew kind of behind the scenes what his words, maybe they were the final push to say, all right, let me move on. And what he's been able to do from a media standpoint, man, that dude, man, it's been incredible. Like, I still remember, Brian, I always tell him this. Like, I remember when you were a second round pick coming off the bench in summer league. So to see him come from that to like go from making $850,000 to like $15 million to making the money he is now, and then become the voice that he is in the league. His story is pretty incredible, certainly worthy of a documentary. That, you know, it's just stunning what he's been able to do, and he's going to be the next Charles Barkley. So I'm really impressed by Draymond on a daily basis. You know, the sad thing and the sorry thing. A lot of sad things, but shout out to one of my old college basketball teammates. A guy named Curtis Francis. And Curtis said, you know what? He texted me this in our Foothill College group chat that I'm still on. He's like, he's still going to get paid, man. So I was still going to get paid. And I looked at it in 2004, you know, Lute Olson, Arizona coach, referred Sarver to Steve Kerr. So I'm like curious to see what Steve Kerr has to say about all this. And to assist him.
Steve Kerr quit working for him at one point.
Exactly.
He spoke with his actions on that.
Yeah. But I'll be very curious to hear what Steve has to say now. But in 2004, Sarver purchased the team for a record $401 million, which at that time seemed like a ton of money.
A lot, yeah.
And now, dare I say, he could probably get $2.5 billion, maybe $3 billion.
Yeah, so
I think it's three.
So let me go over some things. So Sarver bought the team in 2004 with a group, and he paid $200 million in cash, and he assumed $201 million in debt, which was normal on NBA teams.
Yeah.
He owns about 35% now. I don't know what he owned. I don't know what he went in for then, but he only owns personally about a third of it. So
so he's selling his stake.
Yes, but Baxter Holmes reported this today, and I've talked to some people this afternoon. Every ownership agreement is different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's we get what you can negotiate. And so Robert Sarver, according to Baxter, and Baxter's reporting is, you know, pretty damn good here. He has the right to make all of his partners sell too. And if it's, listen, Ramona, if it's $2.5 billion or more that they're going to get, most of those guys are probably going to want to cash out anyway. But there were some owners who were against him, you know, specifically the number two shareholder. John Najafi. Sarver could force him to sell and not be a part of it anymore.
Ramona, let me throw this in there too, real quick. So once this team sells, and I know you guys have an answer for this, if there are going to be two expansion teams that come into the NBA, does this also benefit the owners? Because now it will have risen the price of what you could pay, have to pay for an expansion team.
Yes, but that was going to happen anyway, Spears.
Push it up even more?
Yeah, any team sale... There's
because
only been
now
one team
that you'll
sale.
Have a recent team that is sold, like it's like who was the previous team before, right? The Clippers, right?
Yes.
And there's been some teams.
The Timberwolves, and the Jazz,
right?
And the Jazz.
But this, I think, could even raise the number even more astronomical.
Yes.
For an expansion team than our. So The owners are, yes, in large are going to get paid from this too.
Well, the owners, I think, are happy to see Robert go. I'm not sure how many owners would really defend Robert. I think what they were defending was a precedent that you could have an action brought against you from 10 years ago and it could force you to sell. I don't think they were crazy about that. But as far as getting Sarver out and getting a new number for a team in a premium market, because Phoenix is a small market relative to like New York, San Francisco, LA, but it's a desirable market. What were you going to say, Ramona?
So what you brought up about John Njoffi, there is one really important point to make here. Robert Sarver is going to decide who buys the team, who he sells the team to.
That's right.
It will have to be approved by other owners, by the Board of Governors. But he gets to decide who he sells to. Okay. I would be shocked if he sold to John Njoffi, because John has been very public about saying he wants him out. He's sort of, you know, I think he's now issued two letters, right? You know, that also affects
now,
another
didn't he
person.
Say, did he say he didn't want to buy?
Yes. Yeah, I think he said that, but in other words, who you're speaking about, could the other shareholders, the other stakeholders,
I think he wanted to make it clear that he wasn't doing this to try to get his hands on the team.
Yeah.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Here's a couple larger points. Another name that you're going to hear surface is Bob Iger. Okay. Former CEO of Disney, recently retired. Bob has been involved in two professional sports group bids so far. So he's shown in, he was involved in one of the groups that was trying to buy Chelsea, the football club in the English Premier League, and also was involved in the group trying to get the Raiders and the Chargers to go to LA a couple years ago, if you remember. He's also very close with Chris Paul. That relationship is well documented. Bob has a long history with the NBA as a broadcast partner. And from what I understand, he'd be interested here. But this is also, you know, Robert Sarver selling the team. Yeah. So is he going to, you know, would he sell it to somebody whose company wrote a story that helped facilitate all this? I don't know. John Njoffi, second largest shareholder, a stakeholder in the Suns, even though he's on record saying, I wasn't doing this so I could buy the team. Like, would he have a chance? I don't think somebody, and especially after the statement I just read from Sarver, he doesn't seem all that contrite. And I think personal relationships are going to matter here, right? Like, if he's feeling burned about how this all went down or having to sell, it didn't seem like he really wanted to. He just stepped aside because it was going to get bad for business and become such a distraction. But there are the usual suspects. I mean, in calling around, you know, the richest man outside of Elon Musk in the world is Jeff Bezos, right? CEO of Amazon. Lorraine Jobs, who is a part owner in Washington, is another name I've been hearing. Larry Ellison, been involved with team bids before. You know, go look at all the people who were involved who bid on the Clippers. That'd be another in recent sales.
Allow me to talk about somebody.
Okay.
Hey, hold that thought real quick. So Adam Silver just put out a statement. He said, I fully accept the decision by Robert Sarver to sell to Phoenix Suns and Mercury. This is the right next step for the organization and community.
Adam got bailed out a little bit on this one. It's not all his fault.
I'll tell you this. Yes, you're right. In actuality, you know, look, he took a lot of heat for the last couple weeks,
but
right?
Ramona, I'm going to hold him to his words. I know. I'm going to hold him to his words he said publicly. I know that behind the scenes he might have done something, but I'm going to hold him to his words he said publicly. Let me just bring up one more potential bidder. You've heard of the now late Sheldon Adelson, who owned the Venetian, Venetian Sands. Maybe it's just Sands is the name of his. He's a casino owner. Passed away. His estate is in excess of $25 billion.
Yeah.
His wife, Miriam, inherited the money. His son-in-law, Patrick Dumont, runs the estate. That group, the Adelson family, is interested in the NBA. They were one of the bidders on the Clippers. Their bid was blown out of the water by Steve Ballmer. They're obviously Las Vegas-based. And if in the event of there being a Las Vegas expansion team, they were one of the groups that would be a potential bidder. And maybe that would, thinking that there may be an expansion team in Las Vegas, maybe that would preclude them from really going after this. But if you can't, if you can't buy the Lakers or the Clippers, and you don't, you know, if there's going to be an expansion team in yeah. Vegas and you live in Vegas, the next best thing is the Suns. I think they've kicked the tires on buying pieces of teams in the past. So that's another name I'll toss out there.
I'm curious about the Seattle groups that have been positioned for years. If there was a team moving there, you know, there's at least two groups pretty close on this, you know, in Seattle. But do you want to wait and see if there's expansion, or do you want a team that's for sale now?
I would say unlikely on the Seattle groups, because one of them owns the Kraken, and the other has a whole bunch of land. The one that Ballmer was previously associated with before he bought the Clippers has all the land, and they wanted to build the arena on the land that they own. They still own the land, I think. So I don't know. I'm not going to rule that out, but I would say we're going to see. The point is, guys, there's going to be a lot of bidders here. And yeah. Sarver's going to be the one that gets to decide.
Let me interject in that real quick too. One thing I always remember about the Warriors sale, and I'm trying to remember the name of the owner, the previous owner, but
Chris Cohan.
Yes, Chris Cohan. He had an opportunity to sell to Ellison from Oracle.
Yep.
Who offered him the most amount of money, and Ellison was on the media locally in the Bay talking on a lot yep. about how he wanted to buy the team and how much better he yep. could make the team. And so he ended up giving, if I'm not mistaken, a nicer bid than Lacob and Goober did. But because he was basically like, you know, irked by Ellison, that he went with the lower bid. So that's something to keep in mind with Sarver.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna throw this out there, and I'm gonna say this loud. You know what? If Sarver really wants to save face, or maybe get the world to heal a little bit and maybe start forgiving him a little bit, why not find a black ownership group or a female ownership group and give them an opportunity to really get a chance at this team. You know, that NBA has one black owner, I guess, and what the only female owner is.
There's two. Either,
it's kind of family stuff, right? Where it's not just them.
Yeah, Gail Benson and
yeah.
Paul Allen's.
Yeah.
Jeannie Buss and Jody Allen.
Who
inherited the team. All three of them inherited the team.
Maybe something like the Denver Broncos, where there is some strong black and female ownership in there. And I mean, I don't know if the world will ever forgive him, but if he does put his owner, you know, sell his team in that kind of direction, I'd be like, all right.
Well, listen, if I was crafting a bid group, I would find out immediately how much longer Chris Paul wants to play.
Yeah.
Because you can't be part of an ownership.
Well,
how much longer does LeBron James want to play?
Well, look,
is that worth retiring for?
I mean, the thing, the guy's name who's been whispered in NBA ownership groups for 6 years is Barack Obama. Do you want to have someone?
Yeah.
But, you know, let me just read the man who's selling his statement today, and we'll think about that. In our current, he said, as a man of faith, I believe in atonement and a path to forgiveness.
Right, read that part over.
As a man of faith, I believe in atonement and the path to forgiveness.
Yeah.
I expected that the commissioner's 1-year suspension would provide the time for me to focus, make amends, and remove my personal controversy from the teams that I and so many fans love. But in our current unforgiving climate, it has become painfully clear that is no longer possible, that whatever good I have done or could still do is outweighed by things I've said in the past. For those reasons, I am beginning the process of seeking buyers for the Sons of Mercury. He has been defiant this entire process. He was defiant before the Baxter story came out. he and his employees and attorneys were defiant after the report came out. They were defiant when the investigation came out. They were defiant when the penalty came out, and he's defiant to the end. So I guess I can be surprised. What you guys are suggesting would be terrific for the league. And, it, you know, obviously, if you, if somebody is going to invest in excess of $2 billion and they're going to be the lead investor, they're going to be the controlling owner. But I would think that anybody who is going to put an ownership group together would want to have strong representation. It would be terrific if you could have a former player as part of it.
What about Charles Barkley, too? I'm keeping an eye on him.
So Barkley was actually rumored back to back in the day. Maybe he gotten that live money, Spears, from the golf.
That's a little morally questionable too.
Yeah, he didn't get that live contract. Barkley was actually rumored to join Sarver's ownership group at one time, and he ended up not doing it. I don't know the story of why he didn't, but I'll bet he's glad he did. But he's glad he did. Yeah, Barkley obviously a Phoenix. You know, Mr. Basketball in Phoenix. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. But yes, Sarver, you know, Sarver, based on what Baxter's reporting, can force the other owners to sell. He can force them out.
Now, and, listen, Brian, I talked to people around the league in terms of what this could, what they could go for. It's not, you know, look, we'll find out what assets they have, what the debt is like, but in terms of what the valuation is going to be like, I think with the upcoming TV rights deal, with the value of other franchises, with everything that the league has going for it right now, the expectation I've heard is it starts with a 3 instead, not a 4. Okay. But that's a very big valuation.
And that's a little bit more aggressive that's a little bit more aggressive than I would go. Remember, the Nets sold for 2.3, I believe, a couple years ago. I will point out that the Suns, when he bought the Suns, it was the Mercury and the Suns. They have subsequently built a practice facility, which is on a valuable piece of land right on the Phoenix Paradise Valley border. And so that would come with the team. And I'm not saying
that the arena.
That was the city owns the arena.
Okay.
But yes, the arena. I mean, they should have built a new arena. It's better than it was, but still, it's still unfortunately in the. I'm not going to go anywhere. I don't want to insult the Phoenix.
I think we can actually find out what they were valued. I have to look this up.
So but Forbes there was a valued equity. Them. Yeah. Yes. Forbes valued them at 1.8. Sportico, which is a little bit more aggressive than Forbes, valued them at $1.9 billion. I think it'll be at least 2.5, but I'm not fighting you, Ramon, on 3. But when you think about their value, you also have to think that that piece of property and practice facility has added to their value.
And isn't there like housing and commercial stuff there next to it too? That'll be part of that.
He doesn't. the Sarver doesn't actually own that. You know who's a big investor in that?
Huh.
Devin Booker. Devin Booker's got his money in that development.
Okay, yeah. So here's what we can look at. July 2021, which is July 7th, the Phoenix Suns were valued at 1.55 when Dial, it's a private equity firm, they made, they bought less than 5% as right. like an LP, a limited partnership in the Suns. So on that valuation, that was basically a year ago, a little over a year ago, they were valued at 1.55.
Right. When minority but shares of teams sell, they sell below what
correct.
The value. But one thing I want to point out, and I don't want to get too far down the financial yeah. rabbit hole. Robert Sarver only owns 35%. So that's still a lot.
It's a nice check.
And so he will be giving, you know, when he sells, he will be making hundreds of millions of dollars in profit. But
yeah,
if the team sells for $3 billion, he will do very well, but he won't pocket $3 billion. But nonetheless,
yeah, this ain't the Dukes now. He's walking away with some cash.
Yeah, and this is what happened with Sterling, right, Ramona? Ramona,
yeah, he made $2 billion.
Will you tell this was in your this seriously was my favorite part of your Sterling tapes. You stirred the Sterling Affairs 30 for 30.
Yeah.
Can you retell the story of when Sterling, I know I've done this to you before, but I just want it again.
Okay.
because eventually Donald Sterling and Steve Ballmer, they had to speak. Shelly negotiated the deal. Shelly Sterling, Donald's wife, negotiated the $2 billion sale. But could you retell the story of when they did the transaction?
Oh, okay. So it was towards the end and Sterling was just basically, he didn't really have the legal authority to be involved in this sale at that point, because there was this unbelievable chess move that Shelly Sterling and her lawyers executed, which was to get Donald Sterling declared mentally incapacitated by two separate psychologists who evaluated him to make financial decisions on behalf of the Sterling Family Trust. Okay. So she was able to sell the team, but he still tried to sue. Okay. And they were in court and these cases were not going to go anywhere, but they wanted to close the sale. They were in escrow. Ballmer was basically taking one last ditch effort to, you know, hey, Donald, let's drop all this lawsuit stuff and let's get this done and clean all the legal stuff up. And when they met, I think the part you're going for, Brian, is when Sterling asked him why he has so much cash laying around. Right.
He's like he keeps, if I remember right, he said, do you really have $2 billion cash that you're going to pay me?
Yeah. And do you really have that? And Ballmer did. And Sterling was like, well, that's stupid. Why would you keep cash laying around like that? Like, why would you just be liquid like that? You should have right. that in real estate. I mean,
why don't you own 35, 750 apartment buildings where you're, you know,
I mean,
treating your tenants badly.
This is how the billionaire class thinks. Sterling's not wrong, right? Like if you have that much cash, it would be you're actually losing money by keeping it liquid. You should turn it into an asset like real estate or that depreciates, etc. Okay,
finance. He was turning it into an asset.
Yeah,
it's about to be worth well over $3 billion.
Yeah,
yeah.
But what the larger point about the Dial Capital and the valuation is that when you're buying a piece of a team, that valuation is for a minority stake, which means you don't have controlling ownership. You're just getting some of the dividends. So it's not worth as much. But when you're buying a controlling ownership stake, that's worth more. So
premium.
A year ago.
Also, there's going to be a bunch of bidders. People didn't want slices of NBA teams.
That's right.
That had no voting power or you couldn't tell them who to draft. So
that's right. That's right.
I will say this. When Sarver bought the Suns, as I said, they assumed $200 million in debt, and his group paid $200 million in cash, just to give you an idea of how the land was different. And this, none of this is really relevant, but it's just he had a 3-year payment plan. He bought from Jerry Colangelo, and he paid Colangelo for 3 years. I believe Steve Ballmer paid by wiring the Sterlings the money.
Here's Steve Ballmer could sneeze. Like he could sneeze and 2 billion would come out. Like that's how much he makes in an hour or something. I mean, you know, I think it's going to be a fun sale. I'll tell you this. From what I hear, this will probably take a couple of months. It's not going to be immediate, but
I think it might take, it might even take longer than that, Ramona, unless you have somebody like Ballmer who just comes in and blows away the building.
And this is interesting with Ballmer. And I think I talked about this in the podcast, but it's worth repeating. When Shelley Sterling met with Steve Ballmer, this is another funny little story. She told me when he called her. So, you know, she was in charge of the sale and he called her, and she's not a morning person. She was like, I think she was up and he kind of surprised her on her cell phone. And, he goes, hi, this is Steve Ballmer. Is this Shelley? And she goes, who? She thought he said Steve Ballmer, you know, like a bomber jet or something, or a bomber jacket. Like he didn't know. And she had to call somebody. Say, somebody named, and she took the call and was very nice. And then she called her lawyer and said, somebody Steve Ballmer called. You mean Steve Ballmer, like the Microsoft CEO, right? And it was like a, you know, when you don't answer, when you don't know a number, like a cell phone call comes in, you're not sure who it is. Like I just loved that scene of her getting surprised on her cell phone, and it was early in the morning. Anyway, she met with him, and she really wanted to sell to one person, not a group. She wanted it to be kind of part of, it was like part of her family. She thought she wanted to sell to somebody who would be part of their family and it would be a single owner. But it also helped that Ballmer basically said, whatever the high bid is, I'll top it, whatever. And she liked him enough to say, okay. And it was like,
she liked all his, those she liked his, she liked his balance enough to believe that he would do it too.
Like whatever, whoever came up short, like they had no chance at the time. Remember Grant Hill was part of a group. David Geffen was part of a group. There was a few.
There was a number of groups.
These personal relationships, it's going to be interesting to see how they play out here, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, Spears, before we go, I've talked to, well, I don't want to say who I talked to, but what do you think this does for the Suns as a team starting on Monday?
Probably take some stress off the players a little bit. But
I think it takes a lot off,
but I just still wonder what they're comfortable saying. Like, I'm really curious to what all their stars say, what Monty says. There's going to be a variety of questions. How does this predominantly black team feel about the use of the N word by the guy? Did they ever hear him say it? Monty is certainly, I implore anybody to read the story I did about, you know, religion is hard to write about, but the way Monty talked about it, you certainly get a lot of respect from him. And I know he's been very introspective about everything. And I'm sure that statement that Sarah had today, and I asked you to repeat the religion part, I wonder what Monty thinks about that. But the one thing is these guys have had a lot of time to really like think about things, and I'm sure Book got some stories, right? And I don't know
how Monty really felt, but when the day the Baxter story came out, I asked him how much, you know, he turned down the Lakers to go to the Suns.
Yeah.
And the Lakers ownership group is Genie, highly respected. Robert Sarver, not highly respected.
Yeah.
And I asked him how much of a factor Robert Sarver was. And he, at the time said that he was a positive force, that his conversations with Robert were positive.
Yeah.
So, you know, he said, I want to be there. So I'm going to be interested to see how he frames this, because I'm sure he didn't know about all this, but he also, you know, so,
well, to his credit, he also said, hey, I'm going to wait and read everything.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't give him a vote of confidence.
That's true.
He said, hey, I'm going to wait and read everything, and then I'll let you know how I feel, which is why I think Monday will be very, very interesting for him, because he is somebody of character, like true character. And, but yeah, man, it's probably going to be a very sad day too, because you are going to probably get some emotion. Because I know they've talked to people who have been affected as well, if they haven't been affected mm-hmm. themselves.
So I'll tell you this.
And then reading. Can we give a shout out to somebody? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Julie Fye, who mm-hmm. is probably knows more than anything, like as much as anybody, about the true stuff about Sarver, who was there for 30 years and kind
of. She's a head of public relations for
she kind of been slowly like pushed out.
She's no longer with the organization.
Yeah. And she was, I think, you know, as good as anybody in PR for a while.
Yeah, a long time. I agree with that.
And so it's sad to see her go, but I'm sure she's dealt with her share of stuff over the years, and maybe one day she'll do a book. But I just want to tell her thank you, because she is one of the stars of sports industry. She worked with the Kansas City Kings. She's one of the women who opened doors in the media relations world for other women. Like, and so it's sad to see her go. But I'm guessing with everything that's happened that she probably feels a little bit better today too.
I'm glad you said that. And I'll leave you with this. Like, you know, in our line of work, like I generally don't get personal about this kind of stuff, because it's our job to be objective and to hear everything and report on everything. And so I'm not going to deviate from that now, but as an observation, there were some awful things that were said and done to women in that organization as well. And, you know, sometimes it's hard as a woman to like call that out, because you seem like the angry woman, right? Or you'll seem like you're taking something personally when it didn't happen to you or whatever it is. But I appreciate the comments from Chris Paul. I appreciate the comments from other men my colleague, Richard Jefferson was sitting next to me, Zach Lowe, Mark. Like, I appreciate people shining a light on those comments and the hurtfulness of that stuff as well.
Yeah. Well said.
Like I said, it's a
like
hard
Brian,
day.
I think we're going to see emotion on Monday, Brian. Yeah. I think it's going to be a lot deeper than we can imagine.
It's not, I know that there's celebration that's gone, but it's not, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
I don't feel good.
I mean, truth is, like, you know, I read that thing at the store about the pregnant woman, right? Like, and somebody who just, like, I literally just came back from having a baby, right? So there was like there's an empathy there and a personalization that I feel that I felt like, wow, like people actually caught that part, you know, and they called attention to that. And like you mentioning Julie, like that, you know, we like, there's a lot of people who probably spoke to Baxter, probably spoke on, you know, these, I see him sitting there communicating with current and former employees, right? Or were part of all the people that he spoke to and sources the law firm spoke to, et cetera. And they just, like, there's a lot of people who don't have that platform and who don't have a voice that I think probably feel like, okay, I'm like what you said earlier, Brian, it was yucky the way that everybody got there, but at least there is some sense that those voices were heard. Those incidents were reported, right? Like those were that people like listened.
Well, a book closes today, but there's more, and we're going to hear a lot next week. Thank you, Mr. Spears. Thank you, Ramona. Thank you to our producers for putting this together. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you soon.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.